In the proper liturgy for Ash Wednesday, the priest faces the congregation and says, "I invite you, therefore, in the name of the Church, to the observance of a holy Lent, by self-examination and repentance, by prayer, fasting, and self-denial, and by reading and meditating on God's holy word." Following this, the people's foreheads are marked with ashes collected from burned palms from the previous year's Palm Sunday. While receiving ashes, the people are told, "Remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return." And thus begins Lent. But what exactly does all of this mean? Is it just about giving up chocolate for 40 days, or is something deeper happening? Listen in as Father Augie D'Armond, pastor of St. Peter Catholic Church and member of the Order of Preachers, discusses what it means to observe a Holy Lent. I am the Reverend Broderick Greer, curate at Grace St. Luke's Episcopal Church, and this is Theology Live, a contemporary theology series hosted at Alchemy Memphis. Welcome, Father Augie.
Thanks for having me.
If you could, please tell us who you are and why you do what you do.
Okay, so I am a Dominican friar. We are a group of religious in the Catholic Church, and our focus primarily is on preaching. We couple that preaching and teaching. We're an order now 800 years old, celebrating our jubilee this year. We were founded in 1216. This is 2016. And it is, isn't it great? The 800 years, you know, not quite Benedictines, but we're getting there. We're working on it. We'll never surpass them.
Is that kind of a running joke between the
different
orders?
Oh, it is, yeah. Some of your orders, younger orders, have like little pendants or fancy tags they wear. We're like, you know, we don't need a medal. We don't need a button. We're Dominicans. We have our habit. We're fine. You know.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, so I am, again, pastor of St. Peter Church, and I do what I do because I enjoy preaching and teaching, and I've always enjoyed being at service for my faith community.
So this is Shrove Tuesday, Pancake Day, as some people call it. The day before Ash Wednesday.
Well, now I'm from Louisiana. It's also Mardi Gras.
Oh, it's Mardi Gras. Sorry.
This is the end of a season that began with the Epiphany, Carnival season. So we're coming up on the end. You know, in the history of the church, there's always been times of either feast or famine, you know, and extremes. Yeah.
Interesting. So, yeah, please tell us more about the history of the season of Lent,
sure.
Ash Wednesday, and so forth.
Oh, sure. So as Roman Catholics, we have a tradition of the sacrament of penance, reconciliation. And some faithful go to it, you know, once a year, some three or four times a year, some monthly, some every couple of weeks. It really depends on personal, you know, tradition and personal faith practice. Well, at one time, we did not have a regularly exercised sacrament of penance. It's like, hey, you're baptized, you're forgiven your sins, you go on with life. And early in the history of Christianity, there became, and I use my hands a lot to talk, so you all here present see that I'm Sicilian and you can see what I'm saying. People listening at home are not necessarily going to hear that, but I'm sorry. So just imagine this guy flailing his arms a lot. And so over time, people realized, hey, wait a minute, sure, I'm baptized, I'm redeemed, but I'm also imperfect, and I make mistakes. And so over time, as people would make, a sinful mistake, and we're not talking about, you know, oh, I ate meat on Friday, or we're not talking about, you know, oh, I accidentally slapped somebody upside the head because they were just, you know, being a real, you know, pain. It's like, no, I did something really awful. Like, you know, I cheated on my spouse, or, you know, maybe I committed murder. I mean, these were big things. And it's like, well, how do you then come back into communion with the church once you have done something really terrible against the community? And what was instituted was an order of penitence. And the local bishop would work with the penitent, either by through a deacon or another priest, and say, you're going to spend a period of time coming back to the practice of the faith. And what better time to do that was right before Easter, when most converts, those coming into the church, would be coming in at Easter time. And so the order of penitence became a period of discipline, of sacrifice, denial, extra practices. And that kind of butted up on the end of another period. So some Christian communities were doing baptisms during the Feast of the Baptism of the Lord, you know, right around February 8th, right around the time after Christmas, concluding the Christmas season. And those persons who were baptized would also spend a period of time, 40 days or so, doing prayerful works, penance. And so what became a season between Christmas and Easter of penance and practice became what's called now Lent. So that's kind of in a very quick nutshell how Lent developed. And over the years, even though in the Roman practice, confessions became more cyclical, people going to them throughout the year, we still retain this season. You know, what's also interesting is if you look at our Eastern Orthodox brothers and sisters, they also have periods of penance and fasting, only they have four throughout the year.
Interesting.
So leading up to Easter, they have Lent, or the Great Fast, they call it. After Pentecost, they have the Apostles' Fast, leading from Pentecost to the Feast of Peter and Paul. They have also Mary's Fast from August 1 until the Dormition, August 15th. Which is, you know, what most Western churches call the Assumption. And then again, they have Philip's Fast, which is from the end of November roughly until Christmas Day. So they really do the extremes of feast and famine a lot more than Western Christianity.
So why? I mean, what is the significance of having these times mm-hmm. of famine and feasting in the life of the church? What does that mean for individual Christians and communities?
Well, I think it's twofold. One, there is certainly the spiritual practice of denying ourselves, taking something away from our lives that we enjoy to focus more on our call to be, you know, holy people of God. But it doesn't also it doesn't simply have to be a denial. It can also be an addition to. It could be a prayerful practice. It could be a work of mercy, you know, perhaps spending a little more time visiting the imprisoned, the homebound, the ill, you know, just doing different works, different things that remind us, hey, we're not just in this faith tradition for ourselves, we're also in it to change the world around us, to do good. That's the spiritual and the faith-based side of it. But I think there's also some very practical reality there. And that is, it's good for, as we grow in our understanding of health, it's good to fast. You know, from time to time, the body, I'm not exactly the epitome of it. I mean, I am a full-figured friar, as we say. But there is something to be gained in annually going through a period of fasting, of denying ourselves for good health. But again, if you go into the feasting side of it also, you know, enjoy it. You know, so have, as St. Paul would say, a little wine to ease your stomach, or, you know, enjoy the fat offerings, you know, enjoy the sweets, but not in excess. You know, take time throughout the year to come back to the penance as well.
So it is this, as you call it, a cyclical practice mm-hmm. of embracing the wholeness of human experience.
Absolutely.
Times when we are in the wilderness, those times when we are in places of abundance and excess as well.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to observe a holy Lent? What does it mean to live into God's invitation mm-hmm. to observe this season of what you call famine or fasting?
Mm-hmm. I think it's important to treat it different from other seasons of the year. And I'll come at this also from a pastoral standpoint, you know, being a pastor. Lent should not be a time when it's business as usual. I think there should be some extra time set aside. So should I be worried about all the different nuances of administration that I would be every day of the year? No. some of that should be kind of put aside for a bit. Take extra time to say, this is about rebooting my spiritual life, especially if I've been struggling. And I think we all do, you know, regardless of our vocations, we all have times where we're, you know, trying to do right, but we don't quite get it, where we feel either disconnected from our community or from God. And I think it's important to take a little extra time to evaluate. Retreats are great, you know, 2 or 3 days here, a week there, but to take a season, this 40 days, and to really enter with Christ in the desert, you know, I think is important. There's a reason, I mean, Jesus never did anything that wasn't worthwhile or wasn't aimed towards a certain goal. So for Christ to take 40 days in the desert, I mean, you know, he's the Son of God. He's perfect. He knows his destiny. But he even takes time to discipline and to prepare for the work, you know, the work of Christ. I think we should all do that as well. Take time out of our year to say, well, for these next 40 days, I'm going to take a few minutes each day, an hour each day, and really focus back on, you know, what's God calling me to do? You know, where am I? Why am I here? What's important to me?
Can we shift gears a little bit and talk
Sure.
about the bigger picture liturgically and calendar-wise of what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
I think we can get really caught up in, you know, Lent or fasting for the sake of fasting and Lent.
Right.
And not think of this season as leading up to Holy Week.
Right.
And then ultimately to Easter.
Mm-hmm.
So can you say a little bit more about this broader calendar and broader way of ordering our lives in preparation for Easter?
Oh, of course. So, you know, we have 40 days of Lent, and it's funny that people will try to count up between Ash Wednesday and Easter Sunday and say, well, wait a minute, there's more than 40 days. Maybe we take Sundays off. And it's like, well, no. Lent actually ends on Thursday afternoon of Holy Week. You know, at least in the Roman calendar, it does. And so on Holy Thursday afternoon, we begin that Triduum, those 3 days of celebrating Christ's death, his descent among the dead, his resurrection. And also on Easter Sunday, or well, with the Easter Vigil, Saturday evening, we begin that holy season of Easter. And so 40 days of sacrifice and penance becomes 50 days, a Pentecost, you know, 50 days of rejoicing, of celebration. Again, y'all are going to think I'm more Eastern Orthodox than I am Roman Catholic, but I go back to this. So in the Roman tradition, there's a lot of kneeling. Okay, you know, kneeling during Mass, kneeling in penitential. Well, in the Eastern Church, they do not kneel as much. And in fact, during the Easter season, they do not kneel at all.
That happens in the Episcopal Church as well.
Okay.
Yes.
See, good to know this.
No kneeling during
okay.
Easter. Yeah.
Well, at the end of Easter on Pentecost Sunday, during the celebration of Vespers, in the Eastern churches, they will kneel for this litany of prayer at the end of this beginning another penitential season. And we're talking about kneeling on a concrete floor because they have no kneelers. And you're kneeling there for 15 or 20 or 30 minutes, depending on how fast the deacon can chant. And you're all, you know, begging for an end to this. I had no idea the first time I went, and they said, oh, you know, just go along with it. Okay. And I was kneeling on one knee, and I thought, this can't be that long. And by the time it was over, I had this terrible cramp in my leg. And I said, okay, you know, you experience it once. But you're right. There is a sense that, you know, the liturgical year, really, it focuses on not only the life of Christ, but the life of the faithful. So early in the liturgical year, starting with Advent, there's all this buildup to the coming of Christ. And in fact, it's not the coming of Christ the infant. It's the coming of Christ the King. It's looking forward to that second coming. After the Nativity, then there's the life of Christ, his early years, moving into his passion, his resurrection. And then after Pentecost, the calendar gets really kind of backloaded with the lives of the saints. And so you have all these saints celebrated throughout the rest of the liturgical year. And it's symbolic of we're awaiting Christ, Christ comes, Christ founds the church, and from there, the church goes forth on mission. And then the final season, the final day of the liturgical year, is that feast of Christ the King, you know, the triumphant. And so throughout that, you have different feasts, different famines, different saints, different liturgies. For those of us who are good Sicilians, you have the Feast of St. Joseph, you know, right in the middle of Lent, and so you can party. And it works for the Irish, too. You know, St. Patrick, March 17th, St. Joseph, March 19th. On March 18th, you have a really great party. And you remind yourself, because you will also see in Lent, the fourth Sunday, Laudare Sunday, you know, giving praise to God. And it's a time midway through the sacrifice, the penance, to say, well, there's something more. We're not just, you know, we're not sadists. We're not just, you know, here sacrificing for the sake of penance. We sacrifice in preparation for great celebration. Yeah.
What would you say to people who have never observed Lent before and who may have some misconceptions about mm-hmm. the season, that it's about giving up chocolate, or it's about giving up meat, or it's about, you know, specifically giving up something.
Giving up beer.
Giving up beer.
My sacrifice. Yes.
What do you say about kind of the uninitiated mm-hmm. who are experiencing mm-hmm. Lent for the first time, or who may be curious about it?
I would say start small, mm-hmm. you know. It's almost like a, you know, no money down, no commitment to buy. You know, give it a try. I would say, you know, take the next 40 days as a time to maybe invest in a certain prayer. Maybe there's something, you know, spiritual that one would like to do. Or an extra, like I said earlier, a work of mercy. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be giving something up as much as it is taking on a practice, a discipline. And really saying, well, you know what, for the next 40 days, focus on it, not out of a sense of accomplishment, ooh, I did this, I persevered, but out of a sense of, well, how much closer have I gotten in my relationship with God? How much more have I grown to appreciate my faith? You know, Lent should not be a time of deep mourning, you know. Rather, there should be a sense of joy in it. We enter this joyful season of Lent, a lot of the, you know, prayers will refer to.
What are you giving up for Lent?
So I am giving up my...
Oh, that's a terrible question.
Oh, no, I'm giving up my beer. Yeah, no. I do enjoy, you know, the libation. So that's part of it. Another thing, too, is, you know, I'm trying to add a little bit more. So doing something I haven't done before at my own parish, I'm teaching a five-week course every Wednesday of Lent, every evening, on the corporal and temporal works of mercy. Yeah, so it's given me a chance to go back and kind of make parallels between feeding the hungry and educating the unknowledge, the ignorant, if you will. So, like, what's the relationship between physical nourishment and intellectual nourishment? You know, clothing the naked, and, you know, harboring the homeless. You know, what does it mean, you know, or bringing someone in? So I'm trying to tie together a little bit more, and it's really, I guess one of the first rules of preaching is preacher, preach first to yourself. Yes. If I am not saying something that I need to hear, no one else needs to hear it. You know, maybe it's not that important. So what I'm focusing on this Lent is learning a bit more about these corporal and spiritual works, things I, you know, maybe have put to the side and not really engaged. So in addition to my giving up one thing, that is my beloved beer, it's also, you know, delving into this aspect of our faith.
You know, there is usually a huge emphasis on individual repentance, penitence, mm-hmm. Confession during Lent. Could you say more about what it would look like for a society or a community to take the message of penitence, of transformation, mm-hmm. seriously? So, you know,
sure.
From individual transformation to social transformation.
Well, I don't want to sound really bleak on here, but it sounds like social sin. In a
yes.
sense, yeah,
yes.
we're all, I mean, by being part of a society, if we're, you know, no one is an island. You know, the song was wrong. I am not a rock. I am not an island. We are all in this together. And you know, there could be a sense of, you know, so instead of taking on a personal work of mercy, perhaps one community or another has not been very welcoming. Specifically, what do we have in our nation right now? Immigration. You know, whereas Levitical law, I mean, you want to go back to some fire and brimstone, go back to Levitical law. And I mean, one of the things that is harped on is, you know, mistreating the resident alien. It's like, no, you bring them into your community. You treat them as you would your own brothers and sisters. Well, how do we then, as a, you know, maybe a church community would say, well, what can we do, you know, as a community together to help with, you know, immigration problem? Or even in our own town, you know, here in Memphis, you know, we have there's still, you know, great racial divide, problems with crime, with homelessness. How do we as a community respond? And I know many of our churches, thank God, have taken up the Room at the Inn, you know, which is just incredible. You know, people coming together, cooking food, providing shelter for our brothers and sisters who are less fortunate. There's also the, you know, coming together in prayer. I'm hoping that, you know, most of our liturgical communities, you know, our Christian communities that really celebrate the season of Lent will have different devotions that the people are called to and that we can celebrate together. So it's not just Augie doing his own little thing and, oh, look at me, how great I am. You know, one of the great sins of modernity, and I don't want to sound crazy by saying that, no, but a great sin of modernity is we're all individuals. And what I do is my thing, and what you do is your thing. Well, that's not true. You know, the early church, and this is going even back before that to our Jewish faith, is that we're a human people. We are all one. You know, we have a head who is Christ, but we are all members. And so if one of us suffers, we all suffer. If one of us is elated and joyful, we should all celebrate.
That's a really good point to bring up. You know, it's so interesting. We have a buzz term right now, of course, is social justice.
Sure.
Which is really interesting because in the Bible, there's no such thing as social justice. It's simply justice because the assumption is that if something is just, it's for society.
Right.
And not for the individual.
That's right.
Which is, thank you for,
oh, sure,
for lifting that up.
Well, yeah, well, you know, we talk about the term, and when I first heard this term, this is where I had to grow. I heard the common good, and I, you know, you hear that thrown around, the common good, and I thought, well, that just sounds like least common denominator, or for those who actually know math, highest common factor. But really, that's the actual term. But I realized after, you know, a few people put me on the right track doing a little research, well, of course, the common good is actually a good thing. It is all those elements of society that come together for human flourishing. Wow. And that's what God wants for us. You know, when I reach out to someone in need, I'm not doing it out of a sense of, oh, look how high and mighty I am and I'm serving someone else. Oh, you know, this is great. But no, I am providing an opportunity for my brother or sister who might be less fortunate to enter into a life of flourishing so that he or she will have the same opportunities that I have. That's where, I mean, if you look at Christ, I mean, you know, one in being with God the Father, nothing Christ ever did would make him better or worse. No, Jesus reaches out because Jesus wants all of us to understand and appreciate what it is to live a life of joy in God. And that should be the focus of our work. Not to hang a banner over our heads, but to really help our sisters and brothers.
And what a great way to end our conversation. Thank you so much for the history lesson, the theology lesson, the
being
sociology.
Being a nerd. Dominican is another word for nerd. It's okay.
We actually only invite nerds to Theology.
Excellent.
Live,
so. I feel right at home.
Thank you again for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And yeah. Look forward to speaking again in the future.
Absolutely.
Great. A Holy Lent doesn't have to be a burdensome Lent. A Holy Lent surprises us with moments of God's profound love for us, and not just for us, but the whole cosmos.
During Lent, this profound love slows us down, reorders our schedules, and broadens our imaginations of what's possible. So, I wish you a holy, quiet, and thoughtful Lent. Tune in to next month's episode when our guest, Rabbi Katie Bauman, discusses extremism in the 21st century. Theology Live is a ministry of Grace St. Luke's Episcopal Church, a welcoming community of faith in the heart of Midtown Memphis. This episode of Theology Live was engineered and edited by Noah Glenn, who also composed our theme music. Our Theology Live logo was designed by Andy Gill. We offer special thanks to our friends at Alchemy Memphis and our guest, Father Augie DeArmond. Visit 901theology.com and follow us on Twitter at 901theology for updates about our live events.